Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here, joined as always by Matt Wasko, my co-host. How are you today, Matt?
I'm good. Saturday morning, and we are doing this in a new location.
Yes, we are. So Loading the Bar podcast is now being podcasted from the Anytime Fitness in Lee Summit, Missouri.
Yeah. So that's probably, we just did a video recently and got a lot of reaction from that video telling everybody where we're at. And we're both working at Anytime Fitness now and got a lot of big plans for this particular gym.
Yeah, it's fantastic gym. I think we've both been very impressed by all the amenities, the cleanliness, the community. It's a really great place.
Yeah, it's got a lot of potential, lot of potential. So it's got a good lead system right now. It's got some good foot traffic. Now we just need to nurture those aspects and grow it.
And it's got a good break room that can double as a podcast studio.
That's so, right.
As we found now.
That is right. That's right. So new things on the horizon. And so we're excited for this opportunity. That's for sure.
100%. So let's go ahead and jump into our Fit Focus just like we do every week. And this week we've got an interesting topic. We are talking about raw milk. So I found a little article here, kind of a compilation of some studies and some data, and it says the evidence around raw milk.
This should be interesting.
So what do we have here? Well, summary kind of data point, the CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control, estimates the risk of a glass of raw milk causing a disease outbreak is at least 150 times that of a glass of pasteurized milk. So for those of you guys that don't really know about pasteurized milk versus raw milk is exactly like it says. It's raw. It's in its natural form. It is milked from the cow. It is put in a bottle, chilled, and that's how you drink it.
Right.
Pasteurized milk, however, is essentially the same process, except before you get it, they go through a process of heating the milk up to a certain temperature that's supposed to kill off a lot of the potential bacteria in the milk and is supposed to make it safer to drink once it's pasteurized. And then they obviously bottle it and sell it after it's heated and then cooled down.
Right.
And the CDC's telling us that it's 150 times more dangerous when it's raw.
I'd be curious where that 150 times, how they calculated that.
That would be very interesting because it seems a little arbitrary.
It does.
To me. But for the most part, they talk through this article about, let's see, illnesses. So they basically say that drinking raw milk causes a lot more illnesses to spread.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if any of you guys, kind of the reason why this is brought up lately is the bird flu being talked about a lot and being talked about potentially spread through raw milk. And what it says here is of 4,413 illnesses in the U.S. linked to dairy products between 1993 and 2006, 60% were due to raw milk or raw cheese. So only 60%. Linked to raw milk, the other 40% linked to pasteurized milk. So the interesting part about that article there is if they say it's 150 times more likely to cause disease, why are only 60% of the diseases from raw milk and 40% from pasteurized milk?
True. That doesn't match up.
Doesn't seem to really match up, no. But that's what the CDC wants to say.
Well, you know, the thing is I'll be honest and I have skepticism of anything coming out of the CDC. And to add fuel to the fire, I was a part of a campaign to make it legal for Kansans to advertise raw milk, and which got passed. So this is for before our current governor and Governor Kelly. And now I think there has been some challenge to that since the new regime has come in. But right now you can legally advertise raw milk in the state of Kansas. And now, you know, this is we decided this morning. So I know there was some legal challenges that were coming up. But as far as I know, that was still the case. And the other thing to throw into this is that both of us love raw milk.
Oh, I absolutely love raw milk.
I mean, and
been drinking it for years.
Yes.
Every week. Haven't found the disease yet. So, you know, and the interesting thing to think about this is they talk about how much more dangerous it is for potential disease. But the way I look at it is if the correct practices are followed, it's kind of like, think about cooking in your kitchen. If you allow your food to get all dirty before, you know, when you're cooking and you eat it, yeah, it may give you disease because of bacteria. But if you do it the clean way and the right way, you're not going to get sick from it. It's the same way with raw milk.
Yeah,
as long
same
as
thing.
You know, you know where you're getting it from and that they're doing it the right way and keeping the milk clean, keeping the udders clean, that when they're milking the cow and things like that, treating it at the right temperatures, then it's absolutely safe.
Absolutely. And when I go and buy raw milk, usually I open it right there in the car and take a swig. It's that good.
Oh, it's great. And I think the taste is a big benefit.
Huge.
Right? Because it tastes way better.
Yeah.
It really tastes creamy. I had somebody ask me one time, I was actually buying raw milk at one of the farms that I have bought it at before. And
right.
These people walked in and they were considering buying it. And it was like an unstaffed farm stand. So there was nobody else there except me buying milk. And they said, oh, is the milk good? And I said, yeah. They said, what does it taste like? And I said, it tastes like drinking liquid ice cream.
They
were like, what, really? And I'm like, you know, it kind of does.
Yes. I don't drink chocolate milk. But when you put Hershey's syrup in raw milk, it is like heaven.
Oh
man, it is
I'll have to try
so
that.
Good. So you know, it's talking about the chances of disease, right?
Yeah.
And that's about knowing your source and vetting your source. And but let's compare what the benefits are versus the chance of disease.
Okay.
So beneficial enzymes are active both in raw goat milk and raw cow milk. In pasteurized milk, it's inactive. And pasteurized, it also actually shows almond milk and soy milk, which there's none in those two. There's no active enzymes in either of those. So you only get the good value of enzymes in goat and cow milk. That's raw. Nowhere, you don't get it outside of that.
Well, and the theory is that when this milk is heated and pasteurized, it's heated up to an extremely high temperature, nearly close to boiling, sometimes almost boiling temperature, and that it kills those enzymes, the heat does.
Oh yeah.
So just like it may kill any potential harmful bacteria, it kills all of the good enzymes and any good bacteria that are contained as well. So I think even if we get a potential benefit of a risk of disease, you know, the question becomes, is that risk or is that reduction in risk worth it to lose out on all of these benefits?
Exactly. And they're somewhat extensive. Probiotics.
Yeah.
Okay. Milk, raw milk is real good for the probiotics. And pasteurized, it's destroyed. Okay. So, lactase in producing bacteria is destroyed and pasteurized, no longer active. Healthy fats. Milk is a great healthy fat. And it's damaged, you know, because it's heated up to such a high level. And then you have your omega fats, which are the AA, CLA, DHA, and EPA, very active and healthy, damaged and pasteurized. And then I'm going to touch on one and we can discuss on it. The one that's very important is that I always notice when I drink raw milk, it's got a good amount of protein in it. Well, when you have it pasteurized, a lot of that is damaged. You don't get that high level of protein. And if I can't remember right, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think 6 ounces of raw milk is about 11 grams of protein. Does that sound right?
I think it's a little lower than that.
A little lower than that? Okay.
It's around a gram per ounce.
Gram per ounce. Okay. So you're going to say about six.
Yeah, probably 6 to 8, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember. For some reason, I was thinking it was 11, but it's been a while since I looked that up.
Yeah, and that's another thing to consider now, not only having some of the enzymes and good bacteria killed, but if the quality of the nutrients are also compromised with the pasteurization, then that's a whole nother factor in potentially drinking raw milk instead of pasteurized milk. Because what's the point? And, you know, if you're drinking it for the nutrients, then raw milk has better nutrients. If you're drinking it for the taste, raw milk has better taste. So the only reason to drink pasteurized milk would be if you truly believe you're at high risk of disease and you want to avoid that disease.
Yeah, so that's it. And at that point, it's like, why drink it?
Well, and you know, I thought it was interesting that this study mentioned 4,000 dairy-related diseases between 1993 and 2006 in the United States.
Right.
So what is that about? 13 years, something like that, 4,000. So just a few hundred cases a year.
Yeah, we're talking
in the whole country.
Yeah.
And that's for all dairy, and only 60% of those were raw milk, which means, I mean, we're probably talking maybe 100 or 200 cases of disease from raw milk per year in the whole country.
So that seems like overkill.
It does.
Yeah.
And then, so we have for 100 or 200 little, you know, diseases from raw milk where people probably did follow poor practices, poor hygiene and storage and cleaning practices. We're going to go and just widely across the whole nation pasteurize all the milk and ban the raw milk. Because in a lot of states, you know, you were talking about in Kansas getting it legal to advertise again, because it was previously legal to sell, not legal to advertise
for,
which also doesn't really make any sense. How do you tell people you have it for sale if you can't advertise? But in many states, it's just banned outright, completely.
And here's the other thing. I think, what does pasteurization do? It makes it sit on the shelf longer.
Ah, that's another interesting point that you bring up.
Yeah, it sits on the shelf longer, which means more money. Because as we know, raw milk needs to be kept cool, and it has about 7-day shelf life, give or take. And so that tells me there is a little bit more interest in the money. There might be more about making more money than actually the disease part of it, because it seems like an overkill action to just get rid of all raw milk.
Like maybe the disease risk is the excuse.
Exactly.
To pasteurize, but then the true benefit of pasteurization is, yeah, that the shelf life extends to, I mean, good grief, I've bought milk before that's, you know, back when I drank pasteurized milk, because the expiration was probably 30 days from when I bought it. And you know that it's been probably at least a couple weeks before it even hit the shelf by the time it
got
milked and processed and packaged and shipped and then got to the grocery store and put on the shelf. So, I mean, that's up to 40, 50 days probably that pasteurized milk could sit on the shelf.
Well, and think about this. It always seems there's two things that seem to correlate, right? One is you change the makeup or the the organic structure of the milk, and then what happens? So you have longer shelf life, which strips it of all its nutrients and benefits. Okay, so that seems to play across all food. When you change food for what it was really intended to do, it strips it of all its, you know, what it gives you some bioavailable nutrients. It gives you some of the taste that it used to have, but it's not like it was. So when you play with what, you know, how fruits and vegetables and milk and cheese are supposed to be, it removes the taste, and some things aren't meant to last 30, 40 days.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's obviously been a big push. Everyone understands the term non-GMO.
Yes.
You ever heard that term, right?
Yeah.
Non-genetically modified crops and vegetables and fruits and things. There's a big push for that, right? But here we are modifying the milk before we sell it. You know, where's the push for the not modify the milk, the push for raw milk? But you don't see a whole lot of a push for that. Instead, what you see is a lot of authorities coming down very hard on it.
Right.
There is a case in Pennsylvania. There's an Amish farmer, because the Amish are pretty well known for drinking raw milk, producing their own raw milk and drinking it, and even selling it in cases that they can. Well, he was selling raw milk, among many other things. He was selling his own meat from his farm and things, and the government has actually come and shut him down for doing so.
Wow.
And trying to take his farm away, and there's a really big court case going on that honestly could potentially go all the way to the Supreme Court, and it's going to be really important, you know, for our food freedom here in this country.
Well, you will find across the country there is a strategic way that some of our rights are being stripped away. So if you're in a state that tends to lean very far left, it's hard to find justice. And because that means not only your lower courts, but your federal, they call them federal courts, right? You have your Supreme Court. What's the courts?
Like federal circuit courts.
Circuit court. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, you have your circuit courts, and they're stationed in, like, you'll have one in New York that's for that area. And then each state has its own Supreme Court. And so courts, it goes through different levels of courts. And if you're stuck in a very far left leaning area, it has been shown in the last, you know, 15 to 20 years, they have to go all the way to the Supreme Court before they get justice. So, you know, and that's some of the things we're facing here. Just the freedom to earn a living is becoming a challenge. I think of a case that I was a part of recently where he trains hunting dogs. And the state of Kansas has the ability at any time to infiltrate your home and go through the whole home without a search warrant, without a court document. The Kansas courts have given the I can't remember the name of the organization, but it manages all the dog trainers in the state of Kansas, and they can come in at any time. And if you're not there when they get there, you have 30 minutes to get there. That doesn't matter if you're on vacation or what, or you'll pay a hefty fine. And so this is unconstitutional, and it's currently being fought right now in the state of Kansas. And this was one that may go all the way up to, it's right now being taken to Denver in the circuit court there. And depending on how that rules, it could go even all the way to the Supreme Court. So I was on the ground floor of that.
So is that just for like dog trainers, or that's for everybody?
That's for people who have a lot of dogs that they train for other clients, like this dog trainers.
Like, but that's what the law was for, that they can come to your house anytime? Mm-hmm.
Anytime, unannounced.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, 30 minutes, like that's completely unrealistic.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. If you like have to schedule a time or something for an inspection, like that's one thing, but.
Yeah. And I know ridiculous. I'm sure there's some terminologies I'm not using around this particular case, but that's kind of a layman's view of it. I was the video producer for the video on that client. And that's where the state is overstepping their bounds, right? I mean, that's just unconstitutional. You should not have the right just to go into anyone's home at any time because you train dogs. And you do a massive investigation of the pens and everything to make sure they're legit and everything. There needs to be, I understand what they will say. Well, you know, if you're not treating these dogs right and you know that we're coming, then you have a chance to clean things up.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's other ways to handle this. Not just, you know, arbitrarily, you just show up at the door and you have to allow them in your home without, you know, it's not your sanctuary if you can't allow who you want in or out of your house. So it's a real overstepping of the law in my book. And so, you know, getting back to, our topic with milk, many states don't allow advertising of raw milk. I mean, it's illegal. And I remember one time, a friend of mine has raw milk and I worked with them. And, they were like, if you want some raw milk, I can get you. I was like, absolutely, I want some raw milk. And come to find out, just him talking to me away from his farm was considered a crime.
Wow.
That was considered advertising. And I was like, wow, this is messed up. You know, so that's all kinds of constitutional issues. And so that's what I'm saying. We really have to push back on these laws, and we haven't even gotten through all the benefits of raw milk. I mean, the benefits of raw milk far, far outweigh pasteurized.
Well, that's really interesting to me because I do know about Missouri and the way the regulations read in Missouri. Raw milk is legal to sell in Missouri. However, the sellers are required to gather contact information for the buyers. And the reason that is for is in the case of disease outbreak, or if they find that a batch was contaminated, mm-hmm. that they have the responsibility to contact you and alert you of that. You know, the same way that they recall products all the time on the shelves of grocery stores. You know, you'll hear about it in the news that some, you know, peanut butter was recalled or lettuce or something and for certain dates. And it's the same way. So, you know, you have to wonder if that ability exists to sell a product that to willing buyers who trust the source and they have an outlet to be alerted if something goes wrong, then why would it not be legal, right? Why would other states not want to do that? Why would they crack down so hard on it? What's the motivation?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at it. One is what they tell us. Disease is disease. We need to control the disease, but then follow the money. Okay. Food has been hijacked to do what? Make more money. And think about this. It's not just that the food companies make more money, but the health industry makes more money. Why? Because they've stripped them of all their nutritional benefits, right? Which means we eat more unhealthily. We've covered it in nauseam, I know, but it's a vicious cycle. And that's what's happening right now is that the health industry makes more money just treating the symptoms, and the food companies make more money because they can keep things on the shelf longer. It's a win-win for them. And the only person that suffers is me and you. Well, we don't, because we work hard to eat, put good food in our bodies, but
yeah. The average person.
Yes.
I did see a study the other day, a study or just some data that was talking about obesity rates in this country, comparing them to caloric intake. And what they found was that caloric intake among people has not changed in the past few decades, yet obesity rates have skyrocketed. So the obvious conclusion is that it's not all about how many calories you eat,
mm-hmm.
because people are eating the same amount of calories and getting fatter and fatter.
Right.
So what is another explanation? And I think, you know, that kind of is maybe a connection with the quality of the food is going down, down, down. It's less and less and less nutritious. And that could be part of what's causing our health issues.
You know, thinking about our last podcast, when we had Jordan on, our nutritional expert, and one of the things that came out of that was that fat cells don't multiply, they just get bigger. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a revelation for me. And it makes me think that there may be something in the food that does that, you know, because we're eating the same amount of calories, right? And maybe some people's fat cells are more susceptible than others to something that's in these foods. I'm totally spitballing right now, but you just saying that the calorie intake has not really changed, but now we have this obesity problem, you know, makes me think that the fat cells are affected in a certain way.
Well, I kind of thought of like two potential conclusions, and it's probably a little bit of both. But number one is obviously if the same amount of calories are coming in, then maybe you're not burning as many, right? Maybe we're not as active as a society. We're not moving as much, burning off as many calories. We're more sedentary, and that's part of it. But then the other thought process was the quality of the food. And I think it's probably some of both, but I don't think we can attribute it all to a lack of activity, because while people are less active than they were, it seems like there's something bigger going on here.
Yeah.
To
exactly.
me.
Yeah.
Because there are people out there who are trying and are struggling for many different reasons. Like you brought up Jordan that we had on last week, and she talked about all of her clients that come in looking for nutritional guidance in order to change their health. And she says there's so many other problems that we have to tackle first. Hormones, sleep, you know, all of these different things that are almost have to come first. Not necessarily that they're more important, but they come first in that they have to be tackled before the nutrition can be tackled.
Right, right. You know, I wanted to cover a couple of these other attributes that raw milk have.
Okay.
We've heard mentioned this word a lot, bioavailable, right? And we talk about how sometimes vegetables and fruits don't have the bioavailability as like meat does. So in raw milk, bioavailable vitamins in pasteurized milk, it's reduced. In almond milk and soy milk, it's altered. I don't like the sound of altered.
What does altered mean?
Yeah, I want to do a little more investigation on that, because if I get raw milk, I put that in my shakes.
Me too. Right?
When I don't get raw milk, I hate pasteurized milk, so I'm using almond milk, but I'm using some of the best quality almond milk you can get. But I read in here altered, I'm like, no, I don't like that.
It sounds kind of like natural flavors. Like, yeah, it can kind of be anything.
What the hell
it's altered to what?
Altered to what? bioavailable calcium. And, well, obviously the calcium is going to be damaged when you heat it up to those temperatures. Mm-hmm. So it's inhibited. Same as in almond milk and soy milk. Okay. Bioavailable phosphorus, inhibited. And immunoglobulins, destroyed. So, you know, you're sitting there, here we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 benefits of raw milk. But hey, I take the chance that I might, 1% that I might get a disease. Okay.
Less than 1%.
It's way less than 1%. So
I think that I was doing the math the other day. I've been drinking raw milk now for 2.5 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I've probably drank in, a gallon-ish a week for that whole time frame. That's like 150 gallons.
Right.
With no issues.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I've drinking it pretty old, right? Sometimes it gets a little old on me. I don't get to it as soon as I want to. You mentioned the shelf life only being about 7 days. And if you want it to be at its peak quality, absolutely, you have to have it within 7 days. The fresher, the better, though. So,
oh, absolutely.
The more it'll last. Sometimes you get to 10, whatever, but I've drinking it up to 2 or 3 weeks before.
Oh, man.
And it's starting to smell a little sour.
And so you don't have any issues with the...
Zero issues.
Wow. So you just got to put up with the smell and it's okay.
Yes. Well, the smell and the taste. And it smells worse than it tastes because I've done that before. I've been drinking it like when it's really starting to go bad and my wife will like smell it and be like, oh, I don't know how you drink that. And I'm like, well, if it doesn't taste as bad as it smells.
Right.
It tastes fine. It begins to taste a little more like cheese would taste. But it does start to smell a little bit bad. But even that's fine for you. Whereas spoiled pasteurized milk is not okay to drink.
Right.
But raw milk, that's what I don't think people understand. You know, the fermenting process and the aging process of milk, well, that's kind of the process that it takes to make cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Good point.
So why would it be a problem? It's a natural process of the milk to begin to change properties, go to cheese, you know, like cottage cheese. And then there's things involved in all these processes other than just letting the milk sit. But it's still okay to drink.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, it won't hurt you.
And I have a smell issue that if something smells really bad, I have a hard time putting it down. And that's why I couldn't do bone broth. Is a friend of ours that we both know, Steve. He does. He'll actually put the bone broth in the kitchen and let it boil for, I forget, like 24, 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And then, and then put it in his thermos and then drink it. And I wanted, trying to be healthier, I got a big old bone, cow bone, and I boiled it for X amount of hours. And the smell was so bad. I couldn't, and then I put it in the. If you put bone broth in the freezer, it will gel.
Yeah.
Right. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. And so Steve does it all the time. I have a pro. So smells are kind of an issue for me. But I did. I was pretty sure when raw milk went bad, that you had a period of time you were going to be fine to drink it.
And I've found that to be true. And I've even asked people because, fermented foods are like yogurt too. So yogurt's kind of the same way. It's like the milk has to become a certain age before you can even start that process. And so it's obviously an occurring thing. They talk about the benefits of your gut for fermented foods.
Right.
And the gut microbiome, kind of like we talked about last week, and the benefit of those fermented foods. And I just kind of always thought the process of, well, you know, I'm probably introducing some good bacteria to my gut by drinking this.
Right.
I don't really know that for sure. It's like I said, it's just kind of a guess. I haven't done a lot of extensive research on that, but it's interesting to know that like a food that like it doesn't necessarily spoil, as in it goes bad. It begins to change, but it is still edible.
Right.
Whereas a lot of the food that we're used to buying at the grocery store, a la pasteurized milk, it actually goes bad and it spoils and it is not okay to drink, not safe to drink anymore. But raw milk's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's talk about some of the benefits for you on a practical level. Okay. This is there has been large studies found in the consumption of milk lowers the rate of asthma, allergies. You know, another thing that does that is eating honey that's in your area.
Yes, 100%. Well, and I would wonder, should the raw milk be local if it's going to help your allergies too?
It seemed to make sense.
You know, if the cows are eating the grass and foliage that are near you, and then that ends up in the milk and you drink it, it protects you from the allergies that those foliage cause.
Yeah, and I know since I've been having honey with my yogurt, and I've noticed I had some really, the last few years, I've been having some really bad grass allergies. Like, I feel bad because I would cut the grass and then I'd just break out for like 2 or 3 days. I'd be absolutely miserable. And I kept doing this where I was like, I'm going to go cut the grass, and I cut the grass, and this repeated over and over and over. And it got so bad, my wife's like, you ain't cutting the grass anymore. Because I was miserable to be around because I was just, you know, just draining. And so my wife had started cutting the grass, and I always feel guilty. I'm like, that's my job. But the cut grass really bothers me. And so I've been on this honey now for about a year. And so this summer I was going to give it a shot and to see how I respond, you know.
I would love to see the results of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, but also it goes into, it helps with lower the rates of eczema, ear infections, fevers, and respiratory infections. So, if you think about it, this is kind of common sense, right? If you allow more nutritional benefits in your food, your body's better equipped to fight, you know, bacteria and disease, fevers and allergy and skin issues. So I'm thinking, why even drink pasteurized milk? What's the benefit of it except put it in your cereal or make it part of your baking?
If I'm in a place where all I can get is pasteurized milk, I don't even bother anymore.
I don't.
Yeah. I used to be kind of willing to do both. Like, I prefer the raw milk, but if I had to, pasteurized milk. But I couldn't tell you the last time I've actually had a glass of pasteurized milk.
It's been years. I might have had, I might have had probably about a year ago. Now that I think about it, I think it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I was just like, we didn't have any raw milk, and I wanted some milk. And I took a glass, and that was it. But outside of that, I never drink it. But it's still in the house because there is a couple people in the house that like pasteurized milk. They think it's gross. They think raw milk's gross. Mm. And that's because of conditioning. And I give them crap about it.
Yeah. So. Maybe they'll come around eventually.
I'm just like, you realize that that is garbage, right? And it's like, yeah, I just can't drink the raw milk. It's too thick, you know? And it's like, well, that's conditioning over years.
Yeah, milk's not supposed to be thin.
No. I mean, and that's what let's get the skim milk. Well, it's even stripped even more, you know? So it's just, you're basically just drinking flavored water or something like that's got a milk flavor to it.
Kind of.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the problem now, right? So we talk about all this stuff. Pasteurized milk is found in every grocery store across the country. There's 18 different brands. There's all the different types. There's just regular milk, chocolate milk. You can get strawberry milk. You can get all these different types of pasteurized milk products.
Sugar. Yeah.
Well, what do you do if you want raw milk?
You got to go to the...
How do you get it?
Yeah. Well, you have to go to a farmer's market, or you got to find, you know, an Amish colony or something like that.
Well, I've been to my share of farmer's markets never being able to find raw milk.
Yeah.
And I know I've been to the Lee Summit one right here in our area, and it has a lot of vendors.
It does.
And I couldn't find any raw milk there.
Is that right?
I couldn't.
Wow.
That might have changed because that's been since last year.
Right.
But nobody had raw milk. Almost everything else, you know, that was there, but not raw milk. And I've been to some others, you know, around the area too, different cities that have farmers markets, and have not found any. It's difficult to find.
Right. Yeah. No, it is difficult to find. And you almost need to create a personal connection.
Yes. That would be how I got into raw milk from the very first time. I had never actually had raw milk before. And I got to know somebody through training, actually. Mm-hmm. A client that I was training who we got in a conversation one day about it. And she mentioned drinking raw milk. And I said, you know, I'd love to try raw milk, but I said, I don't even know where you'd get it, you know? And so she informed me of a place that she's able to get raw milk. And it's some Amish farmers that sell their raw milk, and So I decided to try it out.
Right.
And since then, I've gone on to try to research and try to look and talk to people and see what's out there in terms of raw milk. And I found multiple different places now where I can obtain raw milk and that I know are good trusted sources, you know, even very close to where I live. So it's out there. It's just hard to find. And it's not something you're going to find in the grocery store. It's not something you're going to find advertised on TV. You know, it's not none of those things. You kind of have to know the people around you, get to know from your friends, from your family, whoever that might be interested in this, or even find groups near you. You know, sometimes if you find a Facebook group or something that's for finding more natural whole foods locally, local farmers, you know, they're going to have some of those sources on there, but you got to dig a little bit.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, I mentioned several podcasts ago that good food is a chess game. You've got to work to find it. And, you know, and I've had to work to find the eggs I want to get, the meat I want to get, the milk I want to get. I eat a lot of dairy because dairy is usually where I get a lot of good protein and good fats. So I don't need them stripped down because of processing. So, you know, guys, pasteurized milk is just pretty much flavored water. It's like, I mean, with, you know, maybe it's got a little bit of nutritional benefits that supposedly won't have any disease in it. But
yeah, and I found raw milk is, for obvious reasons, a little bit more expensive. Just like any other natural, you know, you go to find a local farmer for produce or meat or something, it's going to be more expensive than the grocery store.
Right.
But it's that much better quality. And it's worth it in the long run.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
However, I was talking to my dad the other day, and he was mentioning how even milk in the store is getting up pretty expensive.
Oh, it's
$5 or $6 a gallon.
Oh, it's more than that. And I mean, it's like, I want to say I haven't seen it lower than $6.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, with pasteurized milk getting that expensive, it's hard to argue with the price as an objection for getting raw milk.
Of course, I don't buy pasteurized milk. I just always kind of look at it. I'm like, holy crap.
Matt had to throw a disclaimer.
Yeah.
He knows the price, but it's not because I'm buying it.
Well, if you've noticed, the processed food is now is expensive.
It's getting crazy.
Yeah. It's like, I told my wife, you might as well just go to the health store, you know, because they're pretty much the same price as buying health food.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like the eggs are the same price almost. The cheese is the same price. You know, you've got some, the processed foods are getting crazy expensive. And so why? You know, you even have even more reason not to buy them. So, I'm always going to Sprouts or Nature's Grocers, or if I can't get out to the farmer's market, that's where I've been going.
I like to go to my garden.
Yeah, well.
Or farmer's markets.
Yeah. Hey, now what do you have in your garden?
This year, man, with the baby, I just didn't get very much of a garden planted.
Yeah.
And my dad always plants a little bit of a garden too, so there's some different stuff in there, you know, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, green beans, some of the basic stuff. But I did find a place. My wife actually introduced me to it. She knew it from growing up because they're over by where she grew up. And they have almost every type of produce that you could imagine.
Hmm.
I mean, berries and, you know, fruit trees and every garden vegetable you could think of, all of it.
Wow.
And, you know, they're open all summer. And just whatever's in season, you can come pick. It's all you pick, so you have to go pick it yourself. They're an older couple, you know. But we've gone up there already probably half a dozen times this summer when strawberries are in season or blueberries or, you know, we've got some green beans. We've got some all different types of stuff.
Wow.
And they sell them for very affordable prices. Like, I don't even know if they might even be cheaper than the grocery store. And obviously, it's way better. Now, you have to go pick it yourself, but to me, that's worth it.
Well, you'll be providing me that location after the podcast.
Well, it's all the way out in Bates City.
How far is that?
From here? I'd say it's probably a good 40 minutes.
Oh, it's not terrible.
Not terrible not at terrible. All.
Fruit, I mean, vegetables and fruit will last getting home.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. They'll last to get home, especially if they're freshly picked like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm having to drive an hour to go up and get my side of beef when I go up to it. I mean, that's
like
a long
way. Like once a year.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So, no, it's funny you mentioned that because my dad, my biological father who lives in Arizona, he gets up in the morning. He has a mango tree, or not a mango tree. He has a pomegranate tree, an orange tree, several orange trees, actually, and I think a lime or lemon tree. And I think he has one more. But he'll get up in the morning and just pick that off in the morning, right off the tree, and have breakfast with his breakfast. And I was like, that is so cool that he can do that. Because he has all these different trees with all these different fruits on there. And it's, talk about fresh. Holy smoke. Tastes so good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That'd be, you know, that's like going out and gathering your eggs in the morning. And then you go in back inside and crack them and fry you some eggs. You know?
Which I want to do. Overland Park's just expanded how many chickens you can have in your backyard. And
how many can you have?
I think it's six.
Six.
Yeah. So we were looking at chicken. I was talking to our friend Trevor.
Yeah, Trevor has some chickens.
Yeah, and so I was talking to him, and we were trading back and forth. You know, what would be a good option for me? And so at some point, you know, he told me it's like, I think it's 6 months before they start. Is that
before
right?
They start laying?
Yeah. And so I thought I'm not going to get it. It's a little bit too late for me to do it now because I want, you know, I'm not going to get them until December. So I thought, well, I'll wait till next year. You know, maybe I'll build it, the chicken coop and their run, you know, sometime in the fall, and then get the chicks, you know, like in January or February or something. So, but I would like to do that. That would be kind of cool to just go outside and get my eggs. The problem is that I eat about 6 dozen a week.
Six chickens is not enough.
No.
You eat 6 dozen eggs a week?
Yeah.
That's like almost a dozen a day.
Yeah, that's about right. I went out and I bought, because I put 3 eggs in all my shakes, and I have about 2 eggs. I have 2 of those shakes a day. So, and then I'll make up usually 5 eggs. That's about right. Yeah, I make 5 eggs in my scrambled eggs. So,
that's close. I eat a lot of eggs.
Yeah,
I don't come close to 6 dozen.
But I just went out and bought I bought 6 dozen yesterday. You know, so that should last me about 7 days. So
interesting. Yeah. You're going to eat a lot more than 6 chickens.
Man. I know. Cause they produce what?
About one egg a day.
One egg a day.
Give or take. So, you know, you'll probably need more like 12.
Yeah, I know. Well, they won't allow that.
Anyway. No. Well, what they don't know won't hurt them.
I have a lot of nervous Nellies around me.
It's cause you live in Overland Park.
Yeah. Right? And, one time I had my car, I was working on my car and I had it up on jacks, and I got tired working on it. I had another few hours left to work on it, so I'm just going to leave it on the jacks. Well, the next day, things happened. I didn't get to it. Well, my nervous Nelly neighbor comes down and reports me to the city because I had my car on jacked up, and I was livid because I was like, I'm working on the car. It's like, I mean, like I have to put it down every single day, but I don't get it done. That seems very inefficient.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and then anyway, that's a whole nother story, because that story goes on and on, because he was a nervous Nelly about several neighbors. We finally found out who it was, and that's a whole story. So,
yeah, that's the struggle.
That's for the gossip podcast.
Yeah. Well, the struggle we all go through to try to get healthy food.
Yes.
You know,
that's for sure.
Getting this raw milk. And, you know, we've got some sources for raw milk. I know I can think of probably a handful, 4 or 5 off the top of my head. And some of them, you know, you got to travel for a little bit. But if you guys are interested in sourcing raw milk, contact us and be happy to share you any of the contacts that we have for raw milk that I know are good, trusted, clean sources. And have some delicious milk.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you what, I just don't know how you drink. And once you drink raw milk, you never go back. And I just don't understand how I just like you compare the two and it's not even a comparison. Huh. I mean, the taste of raw milk is just like, it's fantastic. I can't even put it in words. So good.
So we said at the beginning of the podcast that we are podcasting now from the Anytime Fitness in Lee Summit and that we're both trainers here. So Matt, you want to talk about a little bit of what we got going on here?
Yeah. So Anytime Fitness, as you know, there's like 5,000 locations across the country and they're each, it's a franchise, but each owner has kind of his way he likes to do things. And so what we here at our particular gym, we found an owner that is really vested in providing great benefit and quality to its members, not only in a gym, which we have talked about numerous times, that's very clean, but he wants a great staff here. And he wants people that interface with the clients and creates a community. And so he just doesn't want to offer, you know, the 24/7 resistance training. He wants to offer other benefits as well. And so he's tasked, when I came on, he kind of tasked me with kind of building out the lead program and the HIIT circuit. He wants to get that going and then help him with the marketing. And some of the things I'm talking to him about is building a really strong community, because strong community is what's important for gym retention. It's harder to leave a gym when it feels like it's your second home.
Yeah. And I mean, the goal is to keep people on track, obviously, because yes, everyone comes in, they want to get healthier, get more in shape, but you know, it's a long journey and you know, you got to have things that keep people encouraged along the way. And a good community is pivotal.
Oh, it's absolutely pivotal for the survival of a gym. And because every gym offers like, hey, we're concerned about your health. We're, you know, and you need to distinguish yourself. And one of the ways you can do that is actually creating authentic relationships. Mm-hmm. And through authentic relationships, you show that you care, right? You're there for them through thick and thin. When they're down days, you're picking them up. When they have great days, you celebrate with them. And they need to know that you authentically care. And it's not just about, I see them when I show up. It's about, you know, like some of the things that I'm wanting to do here and with Parker's help is, I've already discussed it, is start a book club, right? Where we talk about mindset, you know, or we might talk about nutrition, read a book about nutrition. And that's mostly because I want to create that bond amongst the members, right? And it's this little, you know, everyone's going to have their own little interest. And these are all things that we had always wanted to do. We just haven't found the vehicle to do it. We want to have where we talk about, you know, we've done some of this in the past where we do mindset meetings, you know, and talk about the struggles that we deal with on a daily basis. And you know, in some ways you can kind of call that therapy, but it's just basically people sharing their struggles and then the people who have found successes, you know, they can share that. And so it gives other people ideas, right? Because every person, like you've stated in the past, every person that has run into a roadblock, someone else has figured it out, right? And that's what those groups are for, right? You know, when I've had two members that I feel have similar life paths, one that's figured it out and one that hasn't, I put them together, right? Because sometimes it's good not just to hear it from your trainer, but to hear it to some this an everyday person that's figured it out and had a lot of success and shared those nook and crannies that sometimes people identify with different personalities. And that's why sometimes community is good, because you find support in a very difficult world to stay healthy.
Well, I think it's very obvious. We talk about it all the time that declining health is an epidemic in this country.
Oh, gosh.
And it's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, gyms have been around for a very long time. Gyms have been doing things the same way for a very long time. And it must be profitable, right? Because gyms are surviving and making money and everything. But this epidemic is not getting any better.
No.
And so, you know, I think it's really plagued our minds when we think about we want to help fix that problem any way we can. It starts at a local level, and we want to bring actual results to the people here at this gym, to the people that we train that are in the area that want help from us. We want to do everything it takes to get them healthy.
Well, take a gander of what the percentage of the population, adult population, exercises with resistance training twice a week.
10%?
A little higher.
15%?
24%.
24%.
Yeah. 24% of people that work out twice a week that are doing something. Well, I don't know if that's all resistance, but I think a good portion of that is resistance training. But 24% is a pretty low number, you know.
Well, so, and that's just the base level.
Yeah, right? Base I level.
Mean, if,
yeah.
If you come in and you resistance train two times a week, but you don't do any of the other things outside of the gym or any of the other things for your health, you're not going to see much difference.
Well, we see that every day.
Oh,
every day. There's a lot of people that come in and they don't seem to be making some gains. Mm-hmm. And I have someone I'm training, and you know, one of their goals is I want to look like X. I said, I think the most important thing you need to do right now is hit your protein goals. Okay. Because until you do that, there is no X or Y or Z. Okay. Because you have to cut the weight. And eating, I had him track his protein for a week, and he's getting about 100 grams of protein. And this is a man, which is way low because he weighs over 200 pounds. And I said, I don't want you to focus on anything else but to get that protein up to 200 grams. And he goes, that's really hard. I said, yeah, it's going to take several months. It means you're going to change. It's going to be probably a lifestyle change for you to figure it out. So let's not worry about, you know, I want to look like X until we actually start cutting some weight. And because sometimes if I give them too much to think about, then it's like this and this and this. And it's like, just focus on that. And then once we start cutting the weight down, it starts opening the doors to other options.
Well, it's a journey.
Yeah.
And it has steps.
Right.
Right. Now, not every single step is the exact same for everybody, because different people have different journeys and different paths. But it's a very logical process, right? Okay, you're in this position. We need to do this first. Then once that's handled and that's tackled, then we can move on and do this. And then this. And then, you know, you can't do it all at once. And if you try to do it all at once, you will fail.
Right.
And if you try to do it all without any help, you may succeed, but it will be much more difficult.
Right.
And, you know, we don't know everything, but we have a lot of experience helping people from day one all the way to end result, and lots of successes on the way in between, and people who love the journey.
Yes.
And crave the journey. And they want this to be the rest of their lives. Right.
Right.
They're not, maybe they came in looking to, you know, achieve a certain look or achieve a certain goal, but that doesn't satisfy them anymore. It's the journey. It's achieving better health. It's enjoying their health lifestyle.
Right.
That keeps them going.
Right.
And they almost like get, I just hate to use the word addiction because it's used in a negative light, but it's almost like they get addicted to it.
Right.
You know, you can't go without your workouts and your eating right and, you know,
yeah,
community.
I mean, it can be, everything's a balance, right? And I know that, like, when I travel, I was talking to a fellow trainer, and we were talking about when we go on vacation, what we do for health. And I'm like, every time I go on vacation, I have the gym mapped out in advance where I'm going. It doesn't matter if it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or anything. I'm there at the gym before everyone wakes up, and I'm home before everyone gets up. And so it doesn't interrupt anybody's activities, right? So I've done this every Thanksgiving for the last several years, where I got up at 4:35 a.m. I'm in the gym, and I'm back home before anybody gets up. And so that has been, and I either bring my cooler with all my stuff in it that I'm going to eat during that time, because my diet's not going to change. or if I'm flying, then I just wait till I get there and buy it. So I've been like that. That I've been pretty consistent about, because I know my makeup, and if I get too far off kilter, it's going to drive me crazy. So even on vacations, I'm pretty religious.
Yeah.
About what I eat.
And, you know, there's time that it's okay to
sure.
be off track a little bit. But, you know, it's also, if you're committed to it, it's very doable. You
yeah.
can figure it out.
Yeah.
But when you get to the point where you hate how you feel when you're off track, it makes you want to figure it out.
Yes.
Right? I'm the same way on vacations. I'm like, we're going to figure this out. I'm going to figure out how I can get some exercise in, because if I don't exercise for a week, I'm going to feel terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to figure out where I can get healthy food from and how I can do that.
Right.
And commit to it.
And I try to take on all the responsibility for it in my family, to where I don't make it a headache for anybody else. Mm-hmm. It's just something I'm going to make the headache for me.
Yeah.
Right. So I won't stress anybody out about how I eat. Right. I remember my mom, who has recently passed, I think it was the last Thanksgiving she was on, and she's like, "You are always eating." And I'm like, Mom, I have goals I'm trying to hit, you know? And she's like, and then I, like, you know, 2 hours later, I'm eating again, like chicken up a chicken breast or something. And just like, "You're eating again?" And so that was the only conflict I got from my mom, is like, "You are always eating." And every time I eat, she'd say the same thing, you know. I'm just like, "Mom, I'm sorry. I just, this is, you know," and I'm trying not to annoy anybody, you know, I was just doing my own thing. Not, you know, interrupt it. It annoyed my mom a little bit, but yeah. So, but on back to, Anytime Fitness, you know, we want to welcome everybody that, you know, we're both here. We both have a lot of, goals for this gym. We're both, probably doing some hybrid training. Similar to what some people have experienced in the past. And we're going to be offering that to the current members as well. You know, that if they want to, be involved in with our personal training, it will make it, it's a win-win for the gym, for us, and for them. Right. So
yeah, I mean, you can kind of, it's almost like a one-stop shop, because you can come here, you can just get the base level membership that's 24/7, and you can mm-hmm. work out anytime. Once we get HIIT classes involved, you know, so that'll be, you know, bigger group classes. We have hybrid training, group training, one-on-one training. So, nutrition coaching, multiple people, I think, that, are really skilled in nutrition. So everything that you guys need to get healthy is right here.
Yes. Yeah. It's everything you need. And we're going to continually, try to add features and benefits to the gym to make it more just a place of home where you can get, you know, everything addressed.
Right? Absolutely.
So, definitely come down to Lee Summit, 3504 Market Street. And, it's just off of South 291. And we got a good amount of our, past trainees that I think are going to be joining us soon.
It's exciting stuff.
It is.
Well, this was episode 26.
It was.
Correct. So yep. 26 episodes in the books. We are extremely excited to be continuing to bring you guys this podcast on a weekly basis. We're extremely excited to have our new studio here, where we're broadcasting from. We're going to keep bringing you some episodes from here, and we will be back with some more next week.
All right, guys. Let's talk to you soon.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.